Thank you for your regular and generous support of Issues Etc. in the past year, 2008. A good summary of my hopes for Issues Etc. for 2009 are St. Paul's words to the Colossians. Pray for us, too, that God may open a door for our message so that we may proclaim the mystery of Christ for which I am in chains. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly, as I should. Be wise in the way that you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Thank you again for your support of Issues Etc. We'll continue defending the faith, teaching the truth, and making the most of every opportunity to proclaim Christ and Him crucified.
You can leave the Episcopal Church, but you cannot take the property. We're looking forward to these churches in this decision being returned to active and vital congregations of the Episcopal Church.
That's the voice of Bishop John Bruno, the Episcopal Diocese of Los Angeles, talking about the Supreme Court ruling in California that would refuse congregations leaving the Episcopal Church USA for theological reasons the right to retain the property. Some of these churches actually built the property. Some of these congregations paid for the property. But as we'll discover in our conversation with Wick Stevens, when they are challenged in court, they want to keep their church buildings, the rectories, you know, things like that. The Episcopal Church USA wins out. They get to keep the property, and the congregations leave empty-handed. Well, not so much empty-handed. They leave this church body, but without the property. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Now, early this afternoon, I talked with Wick Stevens, legal counsel for the Anglican Communion Network, about this Supreme Court decision in California. I asked him first, how big a setback for congregations leaving the Episcopal Church USA is this ruling?
Well, in the short term, it's a setback, a step in the wrong direction for parishes that wish to leave the Episcopal Church and keep their properties. It is not finally determined yet, but in the long term, if this becomes if this decision holds and becomes the final statement in California, it'll be a large setback to every congregation, whether Episcopal or not, which would like to disassociate from its denomination and keep its property in California. So it's much broader than the Episcopal Church, I think.
Now, a lot of people listening probably are wondering, you know, kind of generic Protestants thinking, well, look, a church gets started, they build their own property, they buy their own land, they own the thing as a corporate entity. How is that different from the way this works and apparently the way that the California Supreme Court wants to see it work in the Episcopal Church USA?
Well, Todd, what you've just described is the way that the parishes that have left largely look at the situation, the property they believe is theirs. In 1979, the Episcopal Church passed a canon at its triennial convention, which purported to impress a trust on all parish property just out of the blue. It was proposed at that convention and passed. Now, that a convention was held just weeks after the seminal case of Jones versus Wolf, which was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in early July of 79. So that circumstance that's at play here. The Episcopal Church and the diocese claim under this what is called the Dennis Canon. They claim a trust, and the California Supreme Court has found that the parishes are bound by that trust, even though the creation of the trust did not follow what are called neutral principles of trust law in establishing trust, because the parishes who owned the property were not asked to consent to the trust. Now, our friends in the Methodist Church have been through this issue. They have a similar provision, which was litigated in California two or three years ago in the St. Luke's case, where a Methodist parish left and was able to keep its property because they purported to revoke the national churches or the denominational trust. So the California court would say to all California denominations, if you wish to impress a trust upon parish property so that if people leave, they can't take the property, you can do that. under California statute and under the decision of the Supreme Court in Jones versus Wolfe.
Is it possible that there's going to be an appeal to a higher court past the Supreme Court of California on this issue of church property in the Episcopal Church USA?
It's not likely. There's no appellate process available. There is a process by which parishes can ask the U.S. Supreme Court to look at the case, and that's not a right of appeal. It's discretionary with the Supreme Court as to a U.S. Supreme Court as to whether it would grant hearing. But it is directly interpreting the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in 1979 in Jones versus Wolfe, and it may be that the U.S. Supreme Court would be interested in speaking to this because it's denominational far beyond the bounds of the Episcopal Church. So there's a lot of potential application.
So outside the denomination of the Episcopal Church USA, this ruling will have some effect, although it's difficult to tell at this time what kind of effect it may have.
Well, that's true, but particularly in California, the property issues are clearly decided on at the state law level, not normally at the federal level, so that each state has its own property laws. And so this case that was decided yesterday, if that decision holds and it becomes the final word in California, will affect all California religious corporations whose property is subject to a governance a system other than congregational systems.
So of the 700 congregations, some 700 congregations that are wishing to form a new Episcopal diocese, if you will, in North America, what does this mean for them? Will they have to fight this kind of battle in their own states? And will it mean that many of these congregations, if they stay the course, will have to leave their properties entirely behind?
Well, the makeup of the new Anglican Church in North America is a combination of groups. Some of the groups have come out of the Episcopal Church, so it could have effect on them. Four of the founding members of the new church are former dioceses, whole dioceses in the Episcopal Church in North America and the USA. That issue is still up for grabs. It was not the right of a diocese to withdraw and its parishes to follow with it. It has not been litigated. And while an argument can be made that yesterday's decision will have some influence on the outcome, it really doesn't itself address that issue. That will have to be separately addressed.
Do you think, in general, the California Supreme Court ruling in this issue will dampen the resolve of those congregations that are desiring to find some other affiliation than the Episcopal Church USA?
Yeah, I think to some degree it will. We find that the parishes that leave the Episcopal Church basically do it in three ways. Either they decide to follow the biblical admonition not to engage in litigation, so they leave their property behind and they form a new congregation and begin to worship in schools or cafeterias or storefronts or other church facilities that they find. And there's no litigation that comes there. A second group of parishes that have left or are desiring to leave have or will negotiate with their local diocesan bishops a way to reach peace and keep their property and disaffiliate. And that's not impossible, but it's hard to do. There's the final group that says we believe so strongly that our property is part of who we are that we're going to fight for it. So they stand and fight. Now, that group will be more likely discouraged if this becomes more widely held, this yesterday's decision. Yesterday's decision was a disappointment to us because it was there's been a trend over the last several years that parishes who are sued by their diocese over ownership of church property, the trend has been that the dioceses have won and the parishes have lost. And so the California outcome is very important. And it's not final yet, and it's by no means over. But that's where we stand on that. I would mention also that there's a good group of parishes in the Diocese of Virginia who have just received a favorable ruling from the trial court that allows them to keep their property. And that Virginia litigation engages a state statute which is unique to Virginia, and it provides that it dates back to Civil War time, and provides that if there's a division in a denomination, the members of the denomination can elect which side to go on, and that's been invoked in the litigation there, and the parishes at the trial level have won. Now, I presume that will be appealed by the Episcopal Church and the Diocese of Virginia. But yes, this, in cases like it, will be a damper on those who would wish to leave and keep their property, and they're going to have to decide whether they want to fight an uphill battle if this trend continues, or whether they want to leave their property and form new congregations, or they're willing to just stay and live in the issues of the Episcopal Church that are driving many people away.
Wick Stevens is legal counsel for the Anglican Communion Network. Wick, thank you for being our guest.
Nice to be with you, Todd. Bless you.
Folks, you can find out more about this California Supreme Court ruling and the Anglican Communion Network at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click the on-demand page. When we come back from this break, David Maskey will join us, senior research fellow for the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life based in Washington. We'll talk about the religious affiliation of the newest Congress in the United States, the 111th. By the way, you can find out more about the Supreme Court ruling at our website and find all sorts of resources there, issuesetc.org. Isn't it sad? Instead of heeding the call to repent that these congregations are issuing to their church body just goes to court. Wrong response. We'll be right back. Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you for the production salaries and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Someone who will be dearly missed in Congress.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
As members of the 111th Congress take their seats, we recognize one person who will not be joining them. Marilyn Musgrave, who has represented Colorado's 4th Congressional District since 2002, was defeated in her re-election bid by Betsy Markey, who was heavily supported by the pro-abortion group Emily's List. Marilyn Musgrave was a trailblazing heroine. She was the leader of the House Pro-Life Women's Caucus and co-sponsored the Partial Birth Abortion Ban, the Informed Choice Act, and the Unborn Child Pain Awareness Act. The Susan B. Anthony List salutes Marilyn Musgrave.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.